Greetings, friends. This talk introduces the 8th week's Truth of Happiness course Dhamma study subjects of dependent origination and the 5 clinging aggregates. The week 8 talks were presented over 2 classes. The first talk is on dependent origination, and this second talk is on the 5 clinging aggregates. This talk was recorded in Frenchtown, New Jersey on February 6, 2016. So I'm going to introduce the 5 clinging aggregates, and the reason why this is included in the chapter, in the week 8 chapter, is that dependent origination relates so closely to the 5 clinging aggregates. But we need a little bit more time than 1 week to look at it. So that's why I split it up. And I won't have time to read the whole article, but I'll touch on it enough that we can then study it this week. I got some bifocals coming. So dependent origination describes the impersonal process resulting in confusion and suffering founded in ignorance. The 5 clinging aggregates describe the impersonal nature of the perception of an individual permanent personal self. If you want to interrupt me, if you're not clear about what I'm saying, just holler a little bit. Remember that the Dhamma is taught in the context of the 4 Noble Truths. The 5 clinging aggregates do not seek to explain itself. The 5 clinging aggregates describe the clinging vehicle that experiences suffering. When viewed from this right view, the 5 clinging aggregates are anatta, not self. They're anicca, impermanent, and so dukkha. So remember from week 7, those 3 interrelated characteristics of human life, the 3 marks of existence, are anicca, anatta, and dukkha. We can't escape that. That's just a natural part of living in this world. The interplay of those creates the unsatisfactory experience. Everything is impermanent, including anatta, but what we see ourselves as is a fixed, permanent self. We're denying the impermanence, the natural impermanence of all things, including what we think of ourselves, including our own views of ourselves. And that holding on to a view of self within an environment that is itself impermanent leads to dukkha, leads to that unsatisfactory experience. And so then the Buddha is describing, not to establish a self, but exactly what the vehicle is that experiences this and why it occurs, why suffering occurs, why the unsatisfactory experience occurs. The five clinging aggregates are also known as the 5 khandhas or skandhas. A lot of times they're referenced that way. It's the only reason I said that. So the Buddha's words on this: clinging has craving as its cause. Craving is dependent on feelings. Feelings dependent on contact. This is relating back to dependent origination. Contact is dependent on the 6th sense base, and the 6th sense base is dependent on the establishment of an ego personality. The ego personality is dependent on consciousness, and consciousness is dependent on fabrications. And what is the root of fabrications in the entire mass of confusion? Fabrications are dependent on ignorance for its cause. In other words, if we don't have... it's ignorance of the 4 Noble Truths that starts creating in our minds this conditioned response to the world that results in fabrications. Fabrications are mental constructs, the belief that what is not a self is a self is the perfect example of that fabrication. Rooted in ignorance, fabrications arise. From the cessation of ignorance comes true insight and the cessation of fabrications. From true insights comes cessation of clinging to sensory stimulus, to views and ideas, to rituals and practices, or doctrines itself. A lot of religions, and a lot of Buddhist religions, rely on more so on rituals and practices than a penetrating practice of getting to the heart of the matter. In other words, just one of them that comes to mind, there's a Tibetan lineage that I was a part of for many years that teaches that before you can really begin Dhamma practice, you must do 108,000 full prostrations. Full prostrations, you get down, you touch the ground, you get back up. And once you've done 100, and that, this doesn't mean you do that continuously because it would take years, but you first have to do that. That's a really good example of a ritual or practice that the Buddha is describing is not very helpful. It's just a distraction from it. And it further establishes an ego self when we're doing those kind of things. The wise one is free of clinging, unbound, and at peace. Being at peace, they know confusion and stress have ended. The integrated life, meaning integrated into the Eightfold Path, has been lived. All tasks have been completed. There is nothing further for this world. That last line, there is nothing further for this world, I also use it when I say meta sometimes, doesn't mean that we've awakened and we vanished from the physical world. It simply means we're not creating the cause for our own confusion anymore in this world. That world of disappointment, of suffering and confusion has ended. So the five clinging aggregates, or the five aggregates, are former matter, the physical body and the physical domain. Included in the physical body are the senses and the thinking conditioned mind. The physical or phenomenal domain is all that we perceive through contact with the senses. Any physical form is called the form aggregate. Feeling is the next part of this. Feeling is the experience reaction to mental or physical stimulus. Any emotional or physical feeling is called the feeling aggregate. So we have the physical aggregate. Now comes the feeling aggregate. And when, through contact, we start creating an identity, those two are clinging together. I'm now a physical being that establishes itself through feeling. The next aggregate is perceptions. Perceptions are views formed by discriminating thoughts. Reaction to perceptions further integrates the perception and further conditions the mind. We just talked about that, how that occurs. Daniel's question was a great one. It shows where perceptions can get us more deeply confused. Reaction to perceptions further integrates the perception and further conditions the mind. Perception bound to a false view of self results in a deluded view of reality. So rooted in ignorance, we can only develop more ignorance unless we have some way of changing that thinking, refining that type of mindfulness. Rooted in concentration, we can now turn our minds away from ignorance and more deluded thinking towards right thinking and right view. Right? Very practical and direct. It is through perception that we convey permanent and individuated reality where none exists. Delusion arises by believing that simply because we think something is, let me say that again. Delusion arises by believing that simply because we think something is as it appears to be, it is. Much like that famous saying, I think, therefore I am. It's wrong. That's just creating a continual experience of an ego self. This is discursive thinking. This is also mental, physical sleight of hand, and you are the magician. You're just playing a trick on yourself. You just don't realize it. That's the true expression of life is an illusion. And Buddha never said that life is an illusion. He said life is like an illusion. And it's like an illusion because we are the magician. We're creating the experience that's like an illusion. But the Buddha is saying underneath that thing that we think is an illusion is the profound reality of existence. And what is that profound reality? It's the ongoing process of becoming. Of walking outside and recognizing the cold without taking it personally. The next factor is mental fabrications. Mental fabrications, the next aggregate, I should say. Mental fabrications are thought constructs and held views. Mental fabrications develop from sensory stimulus perceived through wrong view, further conditioning clinging conditioned mind. Mental fabrications incline your mind to wrong views, creating unskillful actions. It is unskillful volitional actions originating in deluded intentions that cause karma. I'll talk more about karma and rebirth next week. But simply, karma is the present moment experience of past intentional and volitional actions moderated by the present state of our mindfulness. And that means that if our mindfulness is inclined towards awakening, our karma will continue that way. Karma is not punishment or any of the other pop applications of it. Or our karma can continue towards deluded thinking and more unsatisfactory experience. It has to do with the present state of our mindfulness. Any mental fabrication is called the fabrication aggregate. Consciousness is the last one. That which arises within form due to contact with the six senses. Consciousness is that which arises from within form due to contact with the six senses. This is not to be taken as part of an awakened mind. Consciousness bound to the clinging aggregates is also impermanent. Consciousness is the active and reactive process of an ego personality continually establishing itself. Any aspect of consciousness is called the consciousness aggregate. Notice the close relationship between the five aggregates and the causative links of dependent origination. The aggregate of form relates to the last eight links of dependent origination. the aggregate of feeling is the requisite condition for craving and indirectly relates to name and form, or nama rupa, the sixth sense base, and contact. The aggregate of perception relates to fabrications, as does consciousness. The aggregate of form originates in ignorance and is animated by consciousness and results in name and form. The aggregate of feeling originates in ignorance and is animated by contact with your sixth sense base and results in craving. The aggregate of perception originates in ignorance and is animated by feeling consciousness. The aggregate of mental fabrications originates in ignorance and results in deluded consciousness. The aggregate of consciousness originates in ignorance and is animated by mental fabrications, resulting in the experience of confusion and unsatisfactoriness. I realize that saying those things, reading those things so quickly just relates to me. But it's not that important to understand each one of these individually. What's important is to start to get an understanding of how, in our own process of becoming, we're the ones that cling these five aggregates together. If you see things clearly, you can see these things as five discrete aspects that we cling together to say, aha, that means I'm a self. And it's through that process that it relates to dependent origination. Each one of these factors of the five clinging aggregates are discrete and impermanent. It's in our clinging together to establish a permanent self through these impermanent factors that we create the vehicle that gets stuck in delusion. And again, remember, the Buddha is not teaching some mystical explanation to things. It's a very practical explanation. Just look at this in your life. What has occurred to you is you have become the five clinging aggregates. When the Buddha describes dukkha, he goes through a list of different things. And then he usually concludes with saying, and the five clinging aggregates are dukkha. What you think you are is the dukkha related to the first noble truth. There is dukkha, there is the five clinging aggregates, the same thing. And when we can penetrate that deeply through the teachings, through these the Eightfold Path and these understandings, such as dependent origination, we can see that clearly and let it go. And what happens when we let it go? At class Wednesday night, somebody was talking about how they feel lighter. They're not, and you talked about it this morning. You don't feel like you're carrying all this stuff around. That relates to the word enlightenment, doesn't it? We're simply lighter. We're not carrying this baggage of an ego personality around. We're not insisting that the world relate to this ego personality in a way that the world can't, because there's nothing there. Does that make sense? And so do you see how we're making a vehicle for our own confusion by clinging these aggregates together rather than it just observing the process that's occurring? If that's not clear yet, that's what we're developing here in this class. Any questions about where I've gone so far with this? Okay, I'm just going to go a little bit. I'm not going to read the whole article, but that's your homework for the week. But the significance of this is to understand that the five clinging aggregates are dependent on ignorance. And ignorance, and the vehicle for continued confusion and suffering, unbinds and unravels. Penetrating the five clinging aggregates, or any single component of dependent origination, begins to unravel clinging and bring an end to ignorance. That's what you were talking about this morning, Jen. When any aggregate binds to any other element or aggregate through clinging, it is called a clinging aggregate. So these five aggregates by themselves do not create delusion and suffering. But when we start clinging them together, when I start using this whole experience that comes through these five physical senses impacted by consciousness with a small c, I've now created a self-referential ego identity which is prone to confusion and suffering. Another way of saying that is the five clinging aggregates, the belief in the five clinging aggregates as a self, is a wrong view. And the right view is beginning to understand that. The right view is understanding ignorance of the Four Noble Truths. So the Buddha first taught the Four Noble Truths, and then these teachings came a little bit later. This is going to be on the retreat too. The second sutta that the Buddha ever taught was the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, the sutta that on the not-self characteristic. And in that, he was getting into the five clinging aggregates. So he's explaining the vehicle that becomes diluted. Did you have a question? Or are you just scratching your head?
Scratching my head. I've got a
question, yeah. Yes, please.
So clinging together the five aggregates creates this ego self. But something that you said, I can't remember what it was, is where the question comes up, which is they exist independently. And when we cling them together, that's when an ego personality becomes. I guess what I'm getting at is those individual pieces, it's okay for them to exist. It's okay to have feelings. It's okay to have perceptions. I don't know if it's okay to have adaptations. And obviously you have a form. So that's just the piece that I'm trying to clarify. So
yeah.
It's okay for all of those things to individually exist. But when we start to bring them together, we do it out of ignorance. And that's where an ego self arises.
That's it. We're done.
I'll see you.
That... penetrating what you just said is really the essence of this. Anyone, you could describe a human being in these terms by saying there are five aggregates, an awakened human being. Take care, Eva. It's in the clinging together that we create a diluted view of life. And if you look closely at each one of these aggregates, if you separate feeling from perception, you can't point to feeling and say, well, there's a self there, can you? And you can't, if you leave feeling aside and just have perception, there's no self in perception. In order to establish an ego personality prone to confusion and suffering, you have to cling these things together. You have to combine them. You have to take, anybody know how to make, well, when you make cement, you mix these three different components together. They're called aggregates, and the aggregate is concrete. We do the same thing. We're trying to make a concrete self out of these five aggregates, and we're the ones that combine them. But keeping them separate and discrete is simply an awakened human being. The Buddha was five unclinging aggregates for the last 45 years of his life, everyone who was ever awakened. Kandana was the one that awakened very quickly after the Buddha's awakening. He was five aggregates, unclinged. You know, he was free of that. He was free of the burden of continually establishing and maintaining an ego personality. Again, it's hard not to look at these things as esoteric or mystical teachings. They're not. They're simply a practical explanation of what's occurring right here, right now.
Can fabrications exist? That one seems hard for me to...
The negative component of a fabrication, something rooted in ignorance, cannot exist in an awakened human being. But the ongoing process of an awakened human being forms fabrications and then immediately lets go of them because of recognizing the impermanence. In other words, we don't get hung up on views. But mental fabrications are part of living in the world. But we don't hold on to them. We don't insist that... And again, it's a fundamental question. Simply because I've created a thought construct, an ego personality insists on maintaining that thought construct because it has identified with it. An awakened being has no longer attached itself to a mental construct, so is not bound to maintain it. It comes and it goes. It's impermanent.
Thought should be flowing because you're a conscious being.
Exactly.
And so even as an awakened human being, you're going to have thoughts. And
hopefully.
Yeah, right. Obviously, I say it out loud and it makes a lot of sense. So it's okay to have that thought and for it to, that in essence is a fabrication, potentially. And you just realize and you recognize it's a fabrication. And
it's more like an expedient. In this moment, I'm using a fabrication to explain what's occurring to me, but I don't attach myself to it.
Okay.
And that's just, that also ties back to Anicca, allowing impermanence to be part of my thought process. I think I was talking to Ron this morning. There's a lot of A lot of people first think of meditation, mostly because of the way it's explaining, as you meditate so you can free yourself of thoughts. You need to achieve this trance-like or a blank slate, and some Buddhist meditation is taught that way. If you can create a blank slate in your own thinking, and it's possible to do that, I used to do meditations like that. How can you create insight? How do you, you've just negated the whole process of becoming, of understanding. So meditation is for developing deep concentration, to just not be distracted by your thoughts. To use your thinking process in a non-distracted way to see life as it occurs, to understand reality. That's the profound nature of Prishamatha Vipassana meditation within the framework of the Eightfold Path. That's why the Buddha taught that meditation and none other. Again, a great question. I'm just going to go a little bit longer. Let me read these two paragraphs and probably stop there. When any aggregate binds to any other element through clinging, it is called a clinging aggregate. It is through these aggregates of observable phenomena that a perception of self arises. For example, when a physical form binds to a mental fabrication called John, it is now a clinging aggregate. John has a pleasant or unpleasant experience. Perception evaluates the feeling and further conditions consciousness to crave more or less of the experience. Something occurs to me, I like it, I want more. Something occurs to me, I don't like it, I want to do everything I can to avoid it. And it might be with, I have had an interaction with Tommy that was unpleasant. And I've created a conditioned response to that. Now when I see Tommy, I might have another response just because I don't like what's coming. Rather than allowing for Anicca to take place, and now Tommy's a nice guy, where before he was an SOB. Do you see how that plays out? When I was a young kid, I don't know why I keep thinking about this at this point in the Dhamma, my mother brought home a big thing of blueberries. And I ate the whole thing and I got sick. Of course, I was like 7 years old. Until I was about 25 years old, I never touched another blueberry. because I thought it was going to make me sick. I just had this aversion to blueberries. And it was somebody insisted that I at least try one that I did. I had to. It was delicious. And to this day, I love blueberries. But I just don't eat that much of them. But I still eat a lot. Pardon?
I did that with eggnog.
Yeah, and so for many, many years, we avoid things that are, at worst, probably neutral. And again, that's another kind of a silly example. But so I, for 18 years, for 18 years, I was avoiding an aspect of life that was just unfolding in front of me. When blueberries came in front of me and part of my life becoming, I ran away. Again, a simple example, maybe a silly example, but we do that with life all the time because of aversion. Our minds are inclined to avoid the things that bring us disappointment, and we chase things that give us pleasure. Excuse me. That's conditioned thinking. That's deluded thinking. Rather than experiencing life as life occurs. So life becomes an endless experience of sensory input followed by discrimination. Each experience is filtered through discriminating and conditioned thought. Each experience provides more validity to the arisen form and further conditioning the consciousness of the form. Notice that each of these factors is impermanent and uncertain. Through unskillful and deluded intention to establish a self based on these five impermanent factors, an ego personality is formed. From a wrong or ignorant view, your ego personality is established. Due to clinging to objects, ideas, and views, your ego personality is defended and maintained. It is your ego personality, or not-self, that is subject to unsatisfactoriness, unhappiness, disappointment, stress, and suffering. Being mindful of the right intention to recognize and abandon craving and clinging begins to unbind the five clinging aggregates. Dependent origination shows that it is from the condition of craving that the condition of clinging arises. Understanding the five clinging aggregates begins to unbind the aggregates and brings the refined mindfulness to see the individual components for what they are and to eventually abandon the need to continue the ego self through continued clinging. The Buddha is using the concept of the five clinging aggregates to show the insubstantial and impermanent nature of what is perceived as an individual, So I'll finish with this. These are the Buddha's words. The five aggregates are anicca, impermanent. Whatever is impermanent, that is dukkha. That is unsatisfactory. Whatever is dukkha, that is without a self. The Buddha is saying that if there's any element of an unsatisfactory nature, there can't be a self in that. So it's a good way of recognizing where we've instilled an ego personality where none should be. Understanding the five clinging aggregates begins to unbind the aggregates and brings the refined mindfulness to see the individual components for what they are. And I just read that. Sorry about that. The five aggregates are anicca, impermanent. Whatever is impermanent, that is dukkha, unsatisfactory. Whatever is dukkha, that is without a self. What is without a self, that is not mine, that I am not, that is not myself. Thus should it be seen by perfect wisdom as it really is. Who sees by perfect wisdom as it really is, his mind, not grasping, is detached from fabrications. We just talked about that. He is liberated. That's enough for today. There's more to it, so I hope you read the rest of that second half on the five clinging aggregates. Are there any questions about this? Is it relatively clear how this is fitting into the rest of the Dhamma and to our understanding? And if not, that's okay. That's what continued practice is for understanding this. This isn't like a class that right now the class is over, you better understand it. The Dhamma is called a practice because we continue to develop deeper insight. You now have the conceptual application of the vehicle that is prone to confusion and suffering, and further Dhamma study will integrate this teachings into your life. So just be open to it and just start recognizing the clinging nature of these five components, these five factors. All right, let's meditate then. I'll give you a call. I want to see you Monday or Tuesday. Okay. Can I call you later on today? Is that all right?
Yes. I'm sorry. Just leave a message if you...
Great. Thanks, Judy. All right, well, meditate for 20 minutes. I want to see then if there are any questions that come up. If they do, just come back to your breath. And we'll talk about it. And then we'll finish with meta. So find your relaxed meditative posture. Gently close your eyes and gently close your mouth. And holding your back straight but not stiff. Your ears aligned with your shoulders and nose aligned with your navel. And holding yourself very loosely, very gently, very lovingly. Allow yourselves to settle into this room. Settle onto your seats. Settle into your bodies, and settle into your minds. And take a moment to become aware of the sensation of breathing in your body. Just get a feel for what that's like. To be mindful of your breath in your body. And while remaining mindful of your breath in your body, notice that thoughts are flowing. We're conscious beings, thoughts should be flowing. The purpose of Shamatha Vipassana meditation is to not be distracted by our own thoughts. So when you notice that you're caught up in your thinking again, simply acknowledge that and return your mindfulness to the sensation of breathing. I'll repeat that. When you find that you're caught up in your thinking again, simply acknowledge that and return your mindfulness to the sensation of breathing. Putting aside thoughts as they arise, remaining mindful of our breathing. And we'll meditate for 20 minutes. Thank you for listening. For more Dhamma talks and articles, please visit crossrivermeditation.com. We rely on donations from our listeners to provide these talks. If you have found this talk helpful in developing your understanding of the Dhamma, please consider a donation at crossrivermeditation.com. This talk is copyrighted and is made available under Creative Commons 4.0 license. Please visit crossrivermeditation.com for use and distribution information. Peace.